Hey, harlots.
I'm Jen.
I'm Liz.
And we're Harmless Harlots.
Relationship geeks.
Ethical sluts.
We love exploring how to have more authentic relationships.
Whether it's with yourself, someone else, multiple others, or even the earth.
We are enthusiasts, not experts. So if you'd like to explore along with us, we give you our enthusiastic consent to come along.
What's a pussycat?
Whoa, 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 whoa. And just wants to say hi. She's been extra neat today.
She looks very fluffy.
She's very fluffy. Oh, fun cat story. Jennifer, I cannot tell you the number of men I have had in my apartment that I have had very rough sex with on my bed. It's happened frequently. It's not new to the cats. They're used to it. It's not a new activity. However, like 2 weeks ago on a random Wednesday, Josh was over and we had sex, not even the roughest sex we've ever had, just like regular sex. And Prancer protest pooped on the carpet. Yeah, she had never done that before. I've had these cats for 4 years and I've had many, many lovers over. Never done it before. Protest pooped on the carpet. I don't know what the fuck. And actually, funny story. So that was before I went to visit my best friend who I was with last week helping with her puppy. And she told me her cat had actually also protest pooped while they were having sex the same day. So I don't know if it was like a moon cycle thing or what, but both of our cats on the same day who have never protest pooped for anything, protest pooped to us having sex. I don't know why. I don't know what was going on.
Is protest poop a cat thing?
Yeah, like when they're upset, they'll like, well, they usually protest pee. So like one time when they were kittens, I was trying to teach them not to get on my couches, which LOL, that didn't work. but I had picked up Prancer and moved her off the couch. And so she got mad. So she jumped back up on the couch and peed on it. So like cats will like protest pee places, but apparently they will also protest poop because they know to use their litter box. And usually you hear of protest pooping in the context of like if you haven't cleaned their litter box out soon enough and like it's too full, they'll get upset and they won't use it. But like I had, the litter box was fine, like it was completely empty. I had just cleaned it earlier that day. So she was just upset that I was having sex and not paying attention to her, or I don't know if she thought that like I was being hurt or what, but
the vibes, it just wasn't the move that day.
It was not according to the cats. Anyway, it was the weirdest thing. They've never done it before. And I was like, this wasn't like, if it had been a like, you know, particularly aggressive session or like something that was different, I would be like, okay, we just got to tone it back. But like, it was just regular sex. Like it wasn't anything special. I don't know why she was upset this particular day with this particular sex, but for some reason it was just unacceptable.
I don't really have any life updates besides my chaotic weekend of moving. But now I'm back home.
You're in my room, it looks like.
It hasn't been your room in like 8 years.
It's never been your room, so.
Well, no, it is Joe's room at the moment, and it is the only place where there is a desk in this entire house, so.
Seriously? Didn't we used to have a desk in the den?
It is, but that is where Joe has his, like, school set up, and he plays D&D in there.
Okay.
I don't know. I prefer this place because it's cold and quiet, and I still have windows, so I like it. But
I regret never sneaking anyone in that window. Like, it's such a perfect window to sneak people in. In both houses we lived in, had a great window for sneaking people in, and I was always too much of a goody-two-shoes to ever do it. But man, if I could go back, I would have snuck so many people in those windows. But I had, when we built the room on the old house, I had the window in that room. And I lived there for at least a year. And it was like my sophomore year of high school, which is peak sneaking people in years. And I didn't do it.
Sure. Yeah. That. Me too. Definitely.
I feel like we were both kind of late bloomers. Neither of us
we
did.
We had other things going on in our lives. We were polysaturated in other ways.
We were academically saturated. We were academically and extracurricularly saturated. We had no time for sexual exploration.
Well, okay, so chapter 4 is called Consensual Non-Monogamy. Oh, I just marked, these necessary changes have come from the courageous and sustained efforts of the oppressed. Many people known and unknown have sacrificed their personal safety, their freedoms, even their own lives for the collective. Talking about like rights for poly people and mm-hmm. how, I don't know, this also ties into what we talked about, but like, how do you create cultural change as just one person? And it's like, you can try and maybe you'll have effect. And like, if you are fine with it, even if you don't have effect, like, good for you. But like, if you don't do anything, like, it's also probably fine. I don't know. What is the responsibility of an individual?
Honestly, I keep going back to the, I don't remember if it was Sex at Dawn quote that was like, don't let anyone convince you people were put here to do anything other than dick around. And I'm just like, I just want to dick around.
But it's so hard.
I know. Part of me is tempted to like leverage our privilege of like having a supportive family unconditionally. And like, we could afford to come out and we wouldn't die. So part of me is like, we should to advocate for other people. But another part of me is like, I don't want this to define me because I really am. Somebody was asking me, I think it was my friend Joe that I went to the Badlands with, was asking me like how I want to be, like what I want people to think when they think of me, like what my primary like characteristics are. I'm really fucking good at math. And I don't know why that's the thing I want people to know, but like I am a goddamn math wizard and I'm really good at my job. And I feel like my whole life as like a white woman that fits into Western beauty standards very well, I have always been hypersexualized and like my sexuality is a part of me. And, you know, when I'm close with people, it's something I want people to know about and it's something I enjoy talking about. But like for most people, just like a Joe Schmo on the street, I'm really good at math and I want that to be my thing. I don't want my thing to be sexuality. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think my thing is kind of kicking in social norms. That's kind of my thing. I remember we've talked about this before, but like the week before I started college, I did this thing where I went on a hike with some people from my college and I never really super connected. Like people always talked about, oh, like the people you go on the hike with, like they're your friends forever. And like, I didn't really connect with anybody on the trip, but like we were going around at the end and like, I just remember that we had like a round where it's like, oh, everybody should say, like give a compliment to like the one person. It's like, okay, cool. And I just remember people being like, yeah, Jen, like you're really original. And I was like, hell yeah. Yeah, I am. I'm not a conformist. Maybe I go to the extremes, but that's definitely a defining thing. And I mean, like you look at me and it's like, oh yeah, she's different. So that's kind of, they look at Lizzie and they're like, oh yeah, she's a total babe. And they look at me and they're like, oh yeah, she doesn't do things.
I was going to say they look at you and they don't even know whether to use she.
Yeah. Gender, I live to confuse people.
I present as much more normative than I'm a little worried for us living together that people are gonna think we're a queer couple, which is fine, but it's just like no sisters, not incest.
Well, I'm pretty sure we look the same, so maybe they'll
disagree. They
well,
do
no,
say
I also
that,
disagree, but I'm just like other people, maybe they would finally understand. But I mean, we've also talked about this before, but like me, I don't really care about coming out. Like I kind of want to get a job before I kind of focus on building that part of my professional profile. But I mean, like, yeah, like I don't really care if everybody knows. And I kind of want everyone to know, as I've said, about potentially becoming a professional in this space. So I mean, yeah I don't know. Someday, somehow.
Yeah. Anyway, we got super off topic.
We did. So yeah, I think basically this chapter is just like introducing consensual non-monogamy and kind of the history of it. And so something I marked was the divorce rate in the U.S. is at 40-50% and an estimated 30-60% of married men and 20-50% of married women in the United States admit to cheating on their partners. Mm-hmm. So
monogamy is fake.
Well, so this reminded me of like several things, but one thing where people are like, when they do talk about stability, it's like the thing with monogamy is like people love the security of like, oh, this is my person, but it's like there never is security. Like, the only way to achieve security is perfectly open and honest, constant communication. And, like, monogamy doesn't ensure that. Polyamory doesn't ensure that. Like, people are autonomous. And, like, the only way to, like, know where you stand is to ask them and to have a relationship of trust and confidence.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, so, like, any arguments against polyamory that are, like, it's unstable and, like, it won't last, it's like, well, like, monogamy is the same fucking thing.
Yeah. I'm going to skip ahead because the point you're making is one I really want to make sure we talk a lot about. But yeah, so on 123, I highlighted that we often assume that having more structural ties in a relationship means more security. And like, there's other quotes I highlighted. I won't talk about every single thing I highlighted, but like, yeah, people talk about monogamy like it's more stable and it's more secure. And it's like, no, like, any relationship structure you have is only as stable and secure as the boundaries you set and whether people adhere to those. Like, you can have just as secure or just as insecure relationships in both monogamy and non-monogamy. And furthermore, I think because people have given this image to monogamy as this, oh, it's so stable and secure and yada yada, and it's this great system, it's not, because people aren't really doing it. Like, if people actually did it, like, if people actually were happy in monogamy and truly, you know, adhered to all the boundaries that were set by monogamy, sure, it would be super stable and secure. But they don't, because people aren't. And again, I know we don't like to say people aren't naturally built for blah 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 blah, but people are obviously a lot of our evolutionary history. Yes, a lot of people are very obviously not satisfied by monogamy. And so even if you set up the structure that's ideally stable and secure, they're not adhering to it because it doesn't work for them. They're not happy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one way you could put it. I could also see one explanation of being of like, monogamy as it is not working, because I do believe that monogamy, as we've talked about, has a lot of scripts and a lot of norms. And they don't really work well for people. Like, there isn't really a one relationship fits all kind of thing that people can rely on. And so I think if in society people adopted a lot of things that polyamorists have kind of perfected, like open, honest communication and setting boundaries, like, I think if people, like, that's just general good relationship advice. Right, but when you're polyamorous, you kind of have, like I've said, like, polyamory is like the Marines. Like, you have to, like, get your shit together or you're going to die. So I think monogamy, again, I don't know, maybe monogamy would be more highly successful if people adopted more polyamory tactics, even, like, not even just being more polyamorous. But again,
well, that's like, the thing.
More people would be polyamorous if it was a norm, but
Well, and I think a lot of people have ascribed healthy relationship tactics to monogamy that are not inherently monogamous. Like, people have said, like, oh, you know, these healthy, secure relationships are one with this great communication, and you can only have that if you have one partner. And it's like, no, your communication skills have nothing to do with the number of partners you have. Is it more difficult to balance multiple partners than one partner? Yeah, no, it's more time, absolutely. Like, it's more difficult. But your maturity emotionally and your communication skills are not tied to the number of partners you have. Like, if you're a shitty person with bad communication skills, you're going to be a shitty person with bad communication skills, regardless of how many partners there are. So, like, it has nothing to do with whether you're monogamous or polyamorous. It's how emotionally mature you are in your communication skills. And I also, I highlighted on page 118, the monoromantic ideal can actually be codependency in disguise. Yes, yes. I have so many friends in monogamous relationships where it's not healthy. They're just codependent. They're just, like, terrified of being alone, which, like, fair, I'm terrified of being alone. I get that, absolutely. But I'm also terrified of being codependent is the only reason I haven't done that, I think. But yeah, I think I'm just struggling to find the quote, but there were quotes about how, like, basically people use the structure set up by the mononormative narrative to mask the issues they have with communication and attachment style. And they're like, instead of working on myself and becoming a better person and, like, setting boundaries and stuff, I'm just going to adopt the social script set up for me by monogamy, and we'll just have that, and it'll be a nice band-aid, and I won't have to work on myself or my communication skills or my emotional intelligence or anything. And they just do that. And for some people, that works, I guess. It's fine, but it's not a super authentic way to live. I don't think you become your best, fullest self living that way. I think you're just, people are lazy, and they just do that. They're like, I'll just adopt monogamy and then not have to be a good person because I can just live by these social scripts and not have to think about it. Which, while I'm ranting, which I am, is also my issue with religion, where people are like, I don't want to come up with my own ethical code and figure out what I think is right and wrong when I could just adopt something somebody else has come up with and just accept it as truth and never question it. And then they live their whole lives being like, this is right, this is wrong. And you're like, why? They're like, because the guy said, I don't want to have to think about it and make my own choices. I'm going to just listen to other people, and that's fine, but it's boring. Think for yourselves. Okay, I'm done.
Valid. I will soften the blow with being like, we don't think all people in monogamy or all people who follow religion are like this.
Yes.
Sometimes it can happen. It can be used as a crutch.
Yes.
But this is just
I fully respect people who are religious because they have thought through what they really think is right and wrong and have like kind of created their own personal doctrine. If it's based in religion, that's fine. Like my big thing is you phrased it well, using it as a crutch, like people who just use it as a crutch because they don't want to do the work. That's what annoys me. I'm like, no, even like you can ascribe to these religious beliefs. That's fine. But like, think through them before you do that. Like, don't just be like, nah, this is what I grew up with. This is what we're doing. I'm not going to question it. Meh. Like, it's so lazy and boring. Yeah. And again, it's fine. You can do that. You're just a boring human.
Okay, Lizzie's got feelings today.
I have a lot of feelings. I have a lot of feelings. I have many, many feelings. Many feelings.
Okay, well, I have many thoughts. So I wrote down my thoughts while you were ranting. So we'll start by circling back. But when you were talking about stability and like, you know, people saying that, you know, it's better in monogamy just because it is monogamy. I remember I was over at a friend's house, like after my sophomore year of college. And that was when I first learned about polyamory in a class at school. When I first heard about it, it was just kind of in passing. I was like, oh, that's interesting. But, you know, we'll sleep on this and come back later. And I think I like mentioned that while I was over at the friend's house, and her mom was like, oh, but like in marriage, I don't remember if I had said something about like not getting married or if I said something about polyamory, but she was like, just getting to know one person and like being so close to one person and like getting to know somebody so deep for like, you know, throughout your life. Like, that's just so special. And I was like, that's not mutually exclusive. Like the thing with polyamory is like, you can be with a person consistently throughout your life. And then just like other people come and go. It's just like, I don't know. It feels more intentional and authentic, as you said. But I do recognize the, like, you know, you get to be 35 and like you just want to settle down, and it's like maybe this person isn't perfect, but like, I don't know, at that point I think it is kind of hard because it's like, I think you do just have to find someone where it's like, but again, I don't know, I don't believe in stability, so it's hard for me to be like, this is possible. At the same time, I'm a human and I want stability.
Well, and the thing is, so the thing with choices is choices are often not permanent. So like, I think a lot of people think if you choose to get married, that's it forever. And ideally, yes, like that's the idea behind monogamy and marriage, is you choose one person and that's your choice forever. But we realized a long time ago, people change over time, and maybe that choice shouldn't be forever, and divorce is an okay thing. And so, I mean, I think people think monogamy provides more stability because, you know, with the whole marriage ceremony, you make this choice and that choice is forever, but it's really not. Like, you have to continue making that choice every single day for it to work. And I mean, that's also true of any relationship. Like, I love weddings. I do. I love people getting together and dancing. I love eating. The excuse, eating food. I love weddings, but I think they're the dumbest shit Because it's like, if you want to be together forever, fine, do that. Like, keep doing that. Cool. Why do we need, why do we need to have this one thing where we're like, we're deciding now and for the rest of time? And it's like, well, you've already been doing that. Like, you've already been deciding every day you want to be together. And like, if you keep doing that, cool, but you might not. So why do we need to have this whole thing where we're like, no, we decide today forever, but maybe not, because we could still get divorced. Like, it's such a, I love weddings. I do. I just think they're dumb.
I think there's a long historical context that I'd have to research into to like talk more about why weddings are and why they still are today. But I mean, well, I think
they originated because like women were property, and it was like a transitioning of women from belonging to their fathers to belonging to their husbands. So
maybe
the history behind it, not great either.
Well, I don't know. But like, I do think just as a modern person in modern days, it can be like, I don't know, like a nice thing to have. It, if you like, you found a person and like, you know, it's been a while and you're like, yeah, like I think this person is going to be a significant part of my life for a while, maybe not forever. And then just having a little party about it. Like,
yeah,
we need more excuses to have parties.
No, I agree. I agree with the party. That's why I'm saying I like marriages. Weddings. I like weddings. I was like, what's the word for marriage party?
I like marriage parties.
Wedding. They're called weddings. Why did I forget that word? I love weddings. But I think we should have wedding-like things for other stuff. Like, Dad always says that, like, the two times families get together are weddings and funerals. And I think that's so dumb. I think we should have other things. I think it should be other things we get together for, not weddings and funerals. I mean, obviously, funerals we should get together. Yeah, births. But like less so. Like you don't have giant parties usually because you're exhausted. Catholic, I guess.
And there's like the christening or like first communion or whatever they do. But no, I'm all for it. More parties of familial celebrations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, we would have like bonfires, yearly bonfires at our great grandma's, and like that wasn't a particular reason. It was just kind of a family event.
Yeah. I like stuff like that.
More parties. I'm excited. Oh, more parties. Maybe not right now. Later.
Not right now, but later, yeah. I'm excited for us to build a space together where we can like host things and stuff and have people over.
Yeah. Okay, that was one point. And then kind of back on the thing of you said about like people using it as crutches of Mother told me a story of you like rescuing a woman off the side of the street.
Yeah. So I was at my friend Jackie's house, and as I was driving home, I passed an intersection and I saw a car stop at the intersection, and two people got out of the front seat and passenger side of the car. And so I thought, oh, they're having car trouble, and was going to slow down and like ask if I could help. And as I slowed down, I saw one of the people start running away and the other person started chasing them. And I was like, oh, they're fighting. And then I had to look where I was going, obviously. So I looked back at the road. And when I looked in my rearview mirror, one of them was on the ground. And I was like, oh, heck. So I pulled off the road and like a scene out of a movie, did a U-turn. And when I got back, I could tell one of them appeared to be a woman and the other one appeared to be a man, was chasing her. And so I, like a badass bitch, turned my hazards on, rolled my passenger window down, pulled up next to the woman, said, do you need a ride? And she said, yes. And she jumped in my car and we took off. And I was like, I am a superhero. But anyway, so we started driving and I asked if she was okay. And she was like, no, like he's been beating me and all this stuff. And I was like, do you want to go to a shelter? Do you want to call the police? I'm like, I only witnessed a little bit, but I am willing to like testify that like, you know, I did see one of you fall down and that's all I could say. But like she had a scrape on her arm, so it was obviously her. And she was like, yeah, he pushed me, all this stuff. And I was like, well, I like if you want to call somebody, we can do whatever. And she was like, no, just like take me home. And I was like, well, do you live with this man? And she was like, yes. And I was like, do you feel safe going home if he's just going to come there? And she was like, yeah, it's fine. And I was like, okay, like I'll if that's what you want, like I'm not going to obviously force you to do anything. But she gave me her number and I texted her and she never responded. But yeah, I dropped her off at home and her family was there when she got there. So she at least wasn't alone. But I was like, I think we should talk to somebody. The complicating factor is she and the man were both Black. And so I also understood her hesitance to like involve authorities because obviously, race complicates it and police suck. So I was like, I get why you wouldn't want to necessarily go to authority figures. That makes sense. But I also was like, I want to do more to help you. I wish I could. But all I could do was what she asked me to do. So I took her home and I don't know what's going to happen. She wrote down her number and I texted her and gave her my name and was like, if you need anything, like, call me. Because my friend lives nearby. So I was like, you know, worst case, my friend could get to you in like 5 minutes and come take you to a shelter or something. But she never responded. So we did what we could.
From the outside, and like, I've never been in any sort of situation, and I don't want to victim blame at all, and I'm not trying to at all, but it's just like, I can't even comprehend like just the psychological state and like conditions and like turns you go through to like get into a place where you're like, I am with someone who hurts me and I'm going to stay. Obviously, like, if there's children involved, yeah, and like that's different, and if you're financially dependent. But it's just like, I don't know, that's just so well, I guess, okay, what I guess it is, it's like, it's terrifying to think that that could happen to me. Because, like, I know, yeah, everybody is always going to be like, oh, like, it would never happen to me. And it's like, but what if it did? That's scary.
Well, when I was being abused, so actually, when I told mom this story, because I called mom after and I told her what happened, and I was also kind of lamenting that I was like, I want to do more for this woman. But like, so actually, after, when we were talking later in the conversation, I said, if he pushed you, we should call someone. And she said, no, I fell. And I was like, a minute ago, you said he pushed you. And she was like, no, I fell. And I was like, okay. So I was lamenting to mom. I was like, oh, I want to do more, but like, I know, you know, you can't if they don't want help. And mom was like, do you know the number of times I tried to tell you that your abuser was a bad person and you made excuses for him every single time? And I was like, I know. She was like, every time I told you he did not have your best interests in mind and he was bad to you, you were like, no, no, he doesn't mean it. And I was like, yeah, I know. And I think that's part of why I knew with this woman, I did everything I could, because when you're in that situation, you're not going to hear when people say they're a bad person because you've already decided they aren't. And I remember what it was like to be in that psychological state. And like, it's weird. I don't know if I could describe to you what conditions make your brain think like that. But I mean, I remember genuinely thinking my abuser was a very good person. And, you know, because he didn't mean to do the things he was doing. He wasn't trying to hurt me. And it just, it fucks with you. And I mean, in hindsight, I'm like, wow, how did I not see that? I'm an idiot. But, you know, people tried to tell me and I just didn't hear it. I don't know. I'm sure there's been research done that you could do on what makes people's brains do that. But yeah, you don't hear it when you're in it.
Yeah. And I guess I think it would be interesting to see, and I'm very certain there isn't, but like, I think it would be interesting to see data on like domestic abuse levels in like poly versus monogamous relationships. Because like, I, you know, they're obviously, domestic abuse and violence and being a shitty person is not, you know, the sole property of monogamy. There are very shitty people who also practice polyamory in varying degrees of ethical ways.
Yeah, I was gonna say, probably not ethical non-monogamy, but they do practice polyamory. That's what I've met a couple of people who have kind of tried to do polyamory, but they do it. Here's the thing, it's easy to be a slut. It's super easy to be a slut. All you gotta do is sleep with people. Easy to be a slut. Not easy to be an ethical slut. You gotta be really intentional about communicating and like being a good person. And I think a lot of people hear polyamory and are like, cool, I can fuck whoever I want and not care. And it's like, no, I mean, you can do that, but no, that's not what the rest of us ethical non-monogamous are doing over here. We're being good people.
Yeah.
Apparently that's a thing with relationship anarchy too, which I was not aware of, but a lot of people use relationship anarchy to be like, I don't have to be kind to my partners because my partners aren't any more important than my acquaintances. And it's like, no, that's not quite what the rest of us are doing.
Yeah. No, that's what I see a lot on the poly pages. I don't know if I've said this already, but I deleted TikTok first and then Instagram. And so I am now mostly on Facebook.
You deleted your Instagram?
Yeah, I don't know. I got a very similar feeling of when I was on TikTok. I was like, Instagram is eating my soul. I can't be here anymore. So I deleted it. And now I'm just on Facebook. And Facebook is such a weird place. It's like, who is on here? But anyway, but my poly groups is where I spend most of my time. And a lot of people are like, my partner's being shitty to me, but like, they say it because like, there's this specific type of polyamory. And they're like, is that okay? And it's like, no, if your partner is being shitty to you, then you have every right to drop them and go somewhere else. Like, being a particular way does not mean you get to treat someone shittily. Maybe you have incompatible needs and wants, and maybe they can't meet your needs and wants. But like, if you are unhappy with a person, do not stay with them just because they are a particular practice a particular relationship style. Like, completing the circle, for your rant on religion, I was talking with someone the other day about kind of like the ethics of raising children within a religion, because kind of what you said of like people who are one religion their whole lives, it's like, oh wow, lucky for you that you happen to be born into raised into the one true religion, like, good for you. But like, I think that people who are converts are much more convincing, because it's like, oh, like, you had a developed brain when you made this conscious decision. And so it's like, if like people who have children, like, I don't know, when I was on TikTok, I spent a good amount of time on like Christian brainwash TikTok of like people talking about their experiences with like traumatic experiences in the church. And like, obviously not everybody who is religious is a terrible person, but like, it can be used in bad ways. And so it's like, I don't know.
Actually, to give some credit to religion, the Lutheran church we grew up in, you never got to do confirmation there, but I did. And part of the confirmation process was, so confirmation is you're confirming your faith in the Lutheran church, and you go through it when you're, I think I was a freshman in high school, so like 13-ish. But part of the process for that was we actually went to other churches and learned about their religions. Oh. So that we had a chance to be like, does this make more sense to you? Would you rather do this? So we went to a Catholic church, we went to a Methodist church, we went to a Baptist church, we went to Presbyterian church. I mean, they were all like Christian, but they did at least give us a chance to look at like other denominations of Christianity and be like, do these things align more with what you want? And if they did, you didn't have to get confirmed. Like, you could say, no, I actually think I align more with the Presbyterians, and they'd be like, all right, cool, have fun. So like, in defense of some religions, I do think the Lutheran church we grew up in did it right, in that they were like, look, this is what we believe, but you should know there's other stuff out there before you decide if this is what you believe.
That is interesting. Yeah. But I guess, yeah, I don't know. I was just thinking of like, I don't know, what are the ethics of like raising a child in a certain religion? And like, I don't know, like, obviously I think there are ethical ways you can do it, but like, when a child is a child, like, there is some sort of like, you are kind of making the child perform this, you know, these acts, which like, I'm not saying like, oh, like, that, how dare you make them perform blasphemy, but it's like, I don't know, it feels kind of brainwashy. Like, we were raised Christian, and so it's like, I think when I heard somebody use the term like Christian mythology, I was like, oh, like, yeah. Like, yeah. We are just kind of another one of the made up things that like some people believe and other people don't. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and again, I'm defending a position I don't even believe in, but here we go. I do think at least our father's brand of Christianity is very rooted in history, because he, I think, did it right, actually. When I talk about people who are religious who actually took the time to question it and see if what they, like, dad did this correctly.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, I am curious about this. I want to question everything. He read the whole ass Bible several times. He went to seminary and devoted, like, several years of his life to just studying religion. So our dad's foundation of religion is rooted in the way that I think is the proper way to do it, where you're like, I'm going to look at all this stuff. I'm going to study history. I'm going to study my personal ethical code. I'm going to decide what I think. And then I'm going to gather information, scientific process this shit, and then decide what I'm going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do think that like, our parents weren't like Bible bashers or like shameful. Like, I don't think they used religion to like shame us in like, you know, at least very explicit ways that I can remember. So I do think that we had it pretty good, but I do think, at least from being on Christian brainwash TikTok, that like, there are ways it can be used very, very poorly.
Yeah. There definitely are.
Okay. Well, I think that was just like one page, but is there another quote you wanted to move on to?
Oh gosh, I don't even remember what quote we were talking about. I know we skipped around a bunch. Oh, they had a name. So one of the things we've talked about on the podcast with my style of polyamory is that I have people in my life who I called my long-term occasional lovers who I've been in my life for many, many years, but they live far away from me. So, you know, when I see them, when I'm traveling, like we'll occasionally have sex and stuff, and we still are very emotionally intimate. We still have conversations. But they're not like, I wouldn't call them partners because I don't talk to them, you know,
partner
on a
life.
Frequent, right. They have a word for that on page 140. They've described those people and they said, we can refer to them as comets or satellites. And
oh,
I was like,
yeah.
Oh, there's a word for that. I'm not the only weirdo doing this.
I do. Actually, I'm on page 140 and I'm pretty sure in that same place I have here on the written partner light that we talked about.
Yeah. I was like, oh, there's a word for what I've been doing.
Yeah, no, I do remember. I had heard that term before, but I'd never really known what it meant. But I do remember reading that and being like, yeah, that's what we talked about.
I was like, yay, I'm not a weirdo. Oh, other interesting thing. Page before that, they said that for adults, a securely attached romantic relationship takes approximately 2 years to really solidify, which,
yeah,
wild. But I mean, it makes sense. Like, I think I don't know how romantic differs from platonic and stuff, but I know I'd heard things about how, like, oh, if you have a friend for 7 years, then once you've been friends for 7 years, you're friends forever or something like that. And Joe, when we went on our Badlands trip, had a whole thing of like, when you spend like 100 quality hours with somebody, after that, you're like attached forever. And that was his whole thing, that trip was not 100 hours long. But when he came back, he gave me this whole speech about how like, we were friends forever because we spent this much time. And I was like, all right, if you say so.
Yeah, no, I marked the same quote and I just wrote, slow down. Because like, I am currently 22, almost 23, and my Instagram is just people getting married, people having babies. And I'm like, this is clearly just, you know, my biased opinion, but it's just like, why are y'all getting married? You're so young. Why are y'all having kids? You're a kid. You don't need a kid. You're a kid. And it's just like, I don't know. I'm also watching The Bachelorette, which I know is not, like, it is not, if you want to find love, you should not attempt to do it through that show. But it's just like, yeah, like, you really just can't even know someone. Like, they talk about, I think, with the two-year thing of, like, seeing them in difficult situations, seeing them in, like, all seasons of the year. Like, people who get married, like, I don't know. I feel like 2 years is a good benchmark of like, okay, we've done 2 years, then like, okay, maybe we can think about doing really long term. But it's just like people who it's like, oh yeah, we met 7 months ago and now we're married. It's like, I don't believe that. I don't believe it at all. I don't believe in love at first sight, really, at all. I don't. I'm sorry. I don't.
Nope, not at all.
If that's your experience, cool, good. I don't think it will ever be mine.
yeah, it's not for me. It's cool if it's for you, not for me. What are other things? Oh, this was a quote about choosing every day. So on 138, they were talking about how consensual non-monogamy can keep us from taking our partners for granted or becoming complacent in our relationships. And also one of the things she said was, I know that my partners are not with me because they are obliged to be, but because they continue to choose to be. And that's what I think I've always liked about not labeling my relationships. Like, I've always hated boyfriend, girlfriend. I don't know why exactly, many reasons, I think. But I think part of having the confines of a label is it's like, you're in it because you have the label, and like, you're not really choosing it every day as much as it's like, it's harder to end it than it is to keep doing it. And what I like about not labeling things is like, you really have to choose it every day to be in it. So like, when I'm with my partner, I know they want to be with me because there's nothing holding them there. Like, it's just me. Whereas like, I have so many married friends who are only married because it's harder for them to get divorced than to just stay married. And it's like, that sucks. Like, I never want to be in that situation where I'm only in a relationship because it's easier to just continue the relationship than to end it, when the ending is really what you should do. So like,
yeah, I mean, there is something to say about like, the thing with marriage is, like, there can be some good things of, like, not making very quick decisions. You know, if you do want to end something, then, like, you have to give it a lot of really good thought. So, I mean, there's a balance between, like, staying because it's hard versus, like, leaving too quickly when you should just work through it. So, I mean, yeah, maybe marriage isn't the perfect way to address that, but I feel like, you know, it's
absolutely
that,
is not.
That isn't terrible. Like, I don't know. There's something to say about having some sort of commitment device so that you don't just up and leave at the first bump in the road. Yeah. But I don't know.
Oh, I found the crutch quote that I was trying to. On 135, she says, many times people in monogamy fall back on the structure of monogamy itself to create a sense of safety in a relationship. So yeah, I think a lot of people in monogamous relationships do not really feel securely attached to their partner. They feel securely attached to monogamy. Like, they feel secure in monogamy, not with their person. Because, like, I know, especially when I was younger, I had so many friends who just wanted a boyfriend. They wanted a boyfriend. They just wanted to be in a relationship. That's all they wanted. And it wasn't that they wanted, like, a particular person. It was that they wanted the structure. And, like, that's fine, again, if that's what people want.
Well, there's also status, which we've talked about.
Yeah, yeah. There's also a status that goes with it, too. Like, being somebody's girlfriend is, like, a thing. It's a thing I never wanted, but it's a thing. But, yeah, I think people are securely attached to a lifestyle more than a person, which, again, maybe that's fine. Like, if that's what you want, maybe it's fine. It's definitely not what I'm looking for.
Just kind of what you've talked about with, like, choosing a default can be easier. And, like, you know, there's pros and cons. Maybe that works for some people. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it would be different if we had different social norms and different defaults. Yeah, I don't know. I think definitely as younger people, stability might be something that we are more flippant about, whereas people who have lived more might have slightly different opinions.
I don't know, but I think it's also in part because of what you were saying about how, like, stability is fake. Like, and I think our generation
is a control.
Yeah, exactly. But I think our generation has grown up in such chaos that we've kind of acknowledged that stability is fake. And I think, you know, there's been various, you know, chaotic events over time, but I think largely our parents' generation was pretty calm. Like, there weren't any huge wars. There wasn't a pandemic. Their terrorism wasn't a big thing. Like, our parents' generation grew up pretty calm. Like, stability for them maybe was a thing. Like, for them, they're like, yeah, we can have consistency, stability. But, like, for us, we grew up with 9/11, the internet, like, just radically fast-changing things in the time since we've been born. Like, there has been no stability. Like, shit's changing at a mile a minute. And, like, yeah.
Who's to say?
Who can say where the road goes when the day goes? Only shake that motherfucker. Get loose with it. I spend too much time on TikTok.
I don't know if I already mentioned this, but my partner and I went to Goodwill a couple of weeks ago, and they were playing, like, a radio station, and it was only TikTok songs. And I was like, huh.
Interesting.
I just thought there was more music in the world, but apparently not.
Apparently this is all there TikTok. Is.
It's only TikTok.
TikTok is all that exists.
Oh, I like this quote. To me, telling people who are struggling with the transition from monogamy to CNM to go back to monogamy because CNM is just too difficult would be like telling the new parents of an infant who are struggling without sleep or personal time that maybe they should just send the kid back since they didn't have any of these issues before the child arrived.
Can I be a really controversial devil's advocate for a minute?
Sure.
I think, okay, I'm going to frame this in a nice way. I think adoption should be more normalized, is how I will phrase it, in that I think a lot of people who have kids maybe shouldn't and realize it later on and maybe should not be parents. And I don't know, I think it's valid to, like, okay, after you have a kid, realize, oh shit, I'm not cut out for this. Would it be better if they'd figured it out sooner? Absolutely. And I think we should invest more time before having kids to think about whether we actually should have kids. But I do think for some people, unfortunately, they don't realize it until they've already had a kid. And at that point, I do wish it was more normalized for parents to be like, yeah, I actually can't do this. And then, you know, there's a lot of gay couples who want to adopt. There's a lot of gay couples who want to adopt. And I think, yeah.
Okay. A lot to unpack there. All right. I will start by saying I agree. There are people who, in the current society, do not have the tools to be good parents. I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I agree. I guess I think it's would be an interesting idea to explore of potentially, you know, like, you have to get a driver's license, you have to get a parent's license. I know that's kind of potentially eugenicsy, potentially controversial, but it's like, why should everyone just be allowed to have a human being of their own? Like, why? But I think I see more of the root. Okay, well, A, that your argument would be better if we had a decent foster care system, but we do not. So that's an issue. I would also say, I think I'm just thinking of the practicalities of it. I agree that there are some people who currently are not equipped with the tools to parent. Do I think society could support them more in a lot of ways? Yes. Do I think
also true.
Having more also true. Communal, villagey living styles that had more dispersed parenthood, that could also be helpful? Having more resources for parents, having better maternity and paternity leave. I agree with your issue. I do not agree with the solution you have proposed, yeah, just giving more kids up for adoption. No, I don't think that's the solution.
So I'm gonna devil's advocate myself now and say I actually do agree that, like, yeah, giving more support would be better. Because I think that was the point of that quote originally, of the, like, telling people who are trying polyamory and are struggling to just go back to monogamy. Don't go back to monogamy. Like, you just need more support and more resources. And you're right. Like, if a parent is like, I'm really struggling with this kid, being like, okay, we need to give you more support and more resources, that is probably the better.
Well, yeah, it was also just like polyamory exposed a lot of, like, insecurities in your relationship. And it's like going back to monogamy and using the monogamy shield, like, sure, maybe that can be comfortable. Sure, maybe you guys can get along with that, but that's not really solving the problem.
You haven't fixed the problems. You've just learned how to live with the problems. And that's fine. But it's boring.
Yeah. Also, going back to the foster thing, which I know was not the main point, but our dad did work in, like, Department of Human Services for a while, and he says that most children, even if their parents are absolute shit, like, if they get the chance, they will go right back to their parents. Just because there's such a strong evolutionary drive, I think, to be with your primary caregivers. That's just, like, that's very hard to beat, even if they are shitty, shitty people. Also, somebody told me that they are on adoption TikTok, and people talk about how, like, adoption is trauma. And, like, there are some people who, like, blame people who adopt kids for, like, you know, doing that. But then it's like, well, the other option wasn't great either. So it's like, I wouldn't really blame the people who are adopting.
Yeah,
so
I don't know. It's a tricky. Yeah, I dad does say that when he worked with foster care children, that, like, they want to be with their biological parents a lot of the time, even if it's not great. But it's hard to know when. I don't know. I'm not.
I agree, one of those moments. Some people who do parenting poorly, I think a solution before forceful adoption is more support and resources. And
I never said forceful adoption. No, I never said forceful.
I know you didn't, but...
I would not be like, if you're having trouble parenting, you have to give up your kid. I'm just saying, I think it's valid It's valid to be like, actually, I'm not good at this. And if they want to, it would be nice if there were resources for them to not have to. Although I think, yeah, you're right. It's better if there are just resources to support them if they don't
and
have the skills.
And if we restructure society so we live in communes and there is more communal raising of children. Because as I've said before, I think it is just a terrible idea of the family unit of just like a child's entire world is built by these two probably broken individuals who will then pass on their brokenness. Whereas if you have multiple people, you can be like, oh, yeah, like my primary kid caregiver is a little fucked up, but like that's not the only way to live. So
I agree. Okay, I'm devil's advocating myself, and I'm taking
We worked through it.
We worked through it.
This is a safe space. All ideas are welcome. we have ideas and we work through them.
This is another one of those moments where we are enthusiasts, not experts, and don't really know what the fuck we're talking about. We're just making it up as we go along.
Yeah, because here it says people struggling with the transition from monogamy to CNM may also find themselves without practical support from their family, friends, and community. So it's just like, it's hard because like, it's like we've said, like there isn't a script, like there aren't supports, like people don't know what they're doing. So
thanks for listening.
If you enjoyed this, leave us a review
or share it with a friend. Or your polycule.
And stay in touch on social media at Harmless Harlots.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.